Good morning. It is 10 a.m., December 10th, 2009. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting at our regularly scheduled meeting, an irregular day. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk for today's regular agenda meeting. Any announcements or comments from my colleagues?
Just good morning and welcome.
And a wish a happy birthday to Al Jager. I hear it's his birthday today.
Al usually celebrates North Dakota's birthday bigger than his own.
Which is older, the state or?
Yeah. We did not talk about this in advance.
Al, that was Kalk.
Anyway. I'll resist further comment. Okay, let's move right on into the agenda, shall we? KC1.
We do have a consent agenda.
We do have
agenda.
Consent items.
Move the items on consent.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, KC1. I move the commission approve bond release number 10 for surface coal mining permit number BNLS8109 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Larson Mine to release all remaining reclamation liabilities on 146.52 acres located in section 17T162 North R94 West, Burke County. The amount of the bond release is $37,226, and it will become effective January 11, 2010, unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
This is one of, I think we have three Larson bond releases today. This 146.5 acres was disturbed, of course, by BNI in the late 70s and early 80s. Most of it was cropland and is cropland now. Not a lot to add to it other than there's just a little bit that was a little over 7 acres disturbed by a clean water diversion within the tract. Everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I guess we're going to interrupt the bond release motions with KC2. I move the commission adopt the findings of facts, conclusion of law, and order a New Star Pipeline Operating Partnership LP North Project System application for certificate of public convenience and necessity, case number PU08194.
Second.
What we have here was an application by NuStar in April of last year for a certificate of public convenience and necessity, which in and of itself doesn't often cause a lot of issues. We did in May then issued the notice of opportunity for a hearing with the usual items to be considered, the need for the service, the fitness, and ability of the applicant to provide the service, its effect on other public utilities, the adequacy of the proposed service, and, of course, the technical, financial, and managerial ability of the applicant to provide that service. In June of 2008, the City of Fargo did file a request for a hearing and then petition to intervene to appear as a party with comments. In July, NuStar then filed a request for extension of time to respond to the request for the hearing and then ultimately filed a request to withdraw their application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. After some back and forth filings which ultimately led to an informal hearing, it was determined that while perhaps NuStar wouldn't have needed to file for the PCNN, the fact that they did, the fact that Fargo intervened, at least it required us to have a hearing before allowing the withdrawal. Then in May of 2009, the administrative law judge entered a pre-hearing order granting Fargo's petition to intervene and scheduled a hearing for June 25th for the purpose of determining a very simple, very narrow question, answering a very narrow question, that is, whether NuStar is a public utility within the meaning of specific Century Code statutes, and I can get into that in a little bit. He also, of course, ruled that Fargo shall have the burden of establishing that NuStar is, in fact, a public utility within the meaning of North Dakota Century Code 4903.1 and change. We did, in fact, then narrow that question down, did, in fact, have a hearing, a formal hearing in the hearing room, and the findings of facts and the conclusions are generally as follows. This pipeline, of course, was originally constructed by Standard Oil Company back in the 1950s as a proprietary pipeline to transport their petroleum products from the Amoco Mandan refinery to various destinations in North Dakota and Minnesota. And at that time, the pipeline was built, and until December of 2002, the same entity owned both the pipeline and the refinery. It remained a proprietary pipeline where products that were transported were owned by the entity that owned the pipeline. That includes up until and included Tesoro, who currently owns the refinery, but not the pipeline. However, in 2002, Caneb Pipeline Operating, which is the former name of NuStar, purchased the pipeline from Tesoro and converted it to a common carrier pipeline. Caneb filed an initial tariff for the pipeline with the Public Service Commission back then. Caneb then changed its name in 2008, and NuStar transports through this pipeline refined petroleum products that it does not own. Tesoro retains ownership of the refined products, and NuStar only acts as a transporter of Tesoro's refined products. I'm going to jump ahead here. It's important to note that all of the products delivered to NuStar's North Jamestown Terminal in North Dakota originate from Tesoro's Mandan Refinery, and then all of the product delivered to BN, Burlington Northern's Mandan Terminal, also originates from Tesoro's Mandan Refinery. In addition, all product on the pipeline is owned by NuStar's single shipper, Tesoro. Effective May 9th, 2008, any shipper may provide facilities for receiving, storing, and loading petroleum products at any delivery point on the pipeline not limited to the carrier's terminal, but only one shipper has historically or is currently providing these needed facilities. This is an important distinction. According to the North Dakota Century Code, a certificate of public convenience and necessity must be obtained if a public utility meets the public utility designation, and it includes any association, person, firm, corporation, limited liability company, or agency engaged or employed in this state to furnish its product or services to the public generally, which is statutorily subject to the jurisdiction of the commission. Now, there is no dispute about the facts in this case. The record is clear that the pipeline is, in fact, a utility. It is a common carrier. It serves a public need, and that it is a monopoly provider of pipeline services between the Mandan, North Dakota refinery, and the Jamestown North Terminal. Under North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 4903.1, the definition of public utility and the consequent requirement to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity do not depend solely on whether an entity is a utility, a common carrier, or a monopoly provider serving a public need. Rather, for an entity to meet the definition of public utility requiring a PCNN, the entity must also be engaged or employed to furnish its products or services to the public generally. Remember, the preponderance of the evidence is the weight of the evidence, the burden of the evidence, the burden of proof is on the intervener in this case who's opposing the withdrawal of the application for a PCNN. We believe the preponderance of the evidence fails to establish that NuStar is engaged or employed to furnish its services to the public generally, or that it proposes to be so engaged or employed. NuStar is not engaged or employed in this state to furnish its product or services to the public generally under North Dakota Century Code Chapter 4903.1, and consequently does not need to obtain a certificate of public convenience and a necessity. So our order simply states that NuStar is not a public utility under the Century Code that's applicable here and is not required to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity for the pipeline. Therefore, NuStar's request to withdraw its application for Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity is granted.
I think the chairman's done a good job of walking through the order. Really, the key to the case is that, to me, are those paragraphs 27 and 28 in the order, the findings. Fargo was basically trying to make the case, because it's a monopoly provider, because it's a common carrier, because it's a utility, it therefore needs a PCNN. What we're finding is, really just reading the plain statute, which is that in addition to those things, you also have to do this other thing, which is provide service to the public generally. In this case, that's not happening. It's also very consistent with precedent that the commission has had in past cases, and we walk through some of those cases in this order. But basically, the commission precedent has been that we have to make that separate determination about whether it's holding itself out to the public generally, and that is a case-by-case decision. And in some cases, it tips one way and some the other. In this case, I think the facts are pretty clear that it's not holding itself out to the public generally. It has is operating today and has always operated as one that is transporting product for one particular company.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
KC3, I move the commission approve bond release number 11 for surface coal mining permit number BNLS 8109 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Larson Mine to release all remaining reclamation liabilities on 22.49 acres located in sections 9 and 16, T162N, R94W, Burke County. The amount of the bond release is $5,287 and it will become effective January 11, 2010, unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
These two tracts are, again, are largely crop. There's just a little bit, about 1 acre of the area that's currently grass, and another 0.15 acres as part of a township road. So everything seems to be in order, good standards, growing standards on these tracts. Again, this was that Larson mine, part of that Larson mine that was mined in the late 70s, early 80s, and reclamation has been going on since.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC4, I move the commission approve bond release number 12 for surface coal mining permit number BNLS 8109 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Larson Mine to release all remaining reclamation liabilities on 80 acres located in section 16, T162N, R94W, Burke County. The amount of the bond release is $44,249 and it will become effective January 11th, 2010 unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
Again, this is late 70s, early 80s that when this was mined. There is a grass waterway and a permanent bond that total about 6.1 acres of the 80. similar to the others, it's actually all but about 8.5 acres were disturbed by BNI's mining coal activities. The interesting thing about this tract is it is owned by the state of North Dakota and managed by the state land department. Everything's in order again, a lot of good crop data as always. Great job by the staff and the company.
All in favor?
Aye. And KC5. I move the commission approve bond release number 3 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK 9601 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to release part of the performance bond for the completion of grading and soil respreading on 614.6 acres of reclaimed land at the Falkirk Mine. The amount of the partial release is $1,091,614.41, and it will become effective January 11, 2010, unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
The order or the motion speaks pretty well to the details. Coal removal on these tracts started in November of 1996 and was completed in October of 2004, and backfilling and rough grading started in 1998 and was completed in 2006. As you notice, this is a partial bond release. The entire bond is in the amount of $4,587,051, and the average bond amount for the disturbed areas in the permit area is just under $3,000 per acre. This, of course, results in a reduction of just over $1 million of that amount. The remaining $3.5 million or so is more than sufficient to cover any of the reclamation that remains and the work that is necessary to complete it. Everything seems to be in order again.
I had one comment before we vote. Mm-hmm. Not so much on Falkirk, but the previous two mines. The BNI Coal actually got an award from the North Dakota State Soil Department on their reclamation awards from one of the top projects in the state, so that might be something to follow up on. They've not only done a good job with the commission, but they've also received a recognition from state organizations. That was BNI.
All in favor?
Aye.
That ends items in my portfolio. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you. TC1, I move the commission issue a notice of request to amend certificate and notice of hearing on the request of Just Wind Wind Farm Development for reconsideration of six turbine locations excluded from the certificate of site compatibility previously issued for its proposed Logan County Wind Farm, case number PU0754.
Second.
As you may recall, on October 29th of this past year, the commission issued a conclusions of or a findings of fact, conclusion of law and order, which issued a site certificate for the Just Wind wind farm in Logan County. In that case, there were six wind turbine locations that the commission declined to cite because of concerns over the close proximity of the wind turbines to residences. And we declined, as I indicated, declined to cite them. Now, on November 10th of this year, Just Wind filed a letter requesting reconsideration of the six turbine locations. And so what we would be doing by this motion is allowing them to make their case, basically. It's a we'll be scheduling a public hearing in the Logan County Courthouse January 26th of 2010 at 11 a.m. Central Time. The burden is still on the applicant to prove that these are acceptable locations. Personally, I'm comfortable with the way that the commission issued the order, but at the same time, I am also willing, if an applicant feels like they have more information to provide the commission and make that case, the burden's on them to make it, and we'll give them their opportunity to do so by passing this motion.
I'm voting no on this one, and I agree with everything Tony's saying, except for the way I look at this is that, you know, they have not submitted any additional information that would cause me to go back and hear this again. I know they have opportunity in the hearing to submit this, but we've already looked at these cases. They gave us some additional noise data, and based on that, they want us to open it up. I mean, if they give us additional noise data, better flicker data, better terrain data, I might be inclined to go down and hold the hearing. And I understand this may come out during the hearing, but I think, once again, the burden is on the company to give us enough information so we can go down with relative certainty that we feel we can make a positive decision on this. I'm not comfortable opening this up again. 1,400 feet, I'm very comfortable with that. I have voted for a turbine less than 1,400 feet on the Basin Farm, but they had additional information on all those things I talked about before.
Sure, and this will give them their opportunity to make that case. As I said, I'm comfortable with the commission's order, but I'm also open to hearing new information. The burden continues to be on them to prove that it's acceptable, however.
And I'm open as well. I just like to see it before we go down there.
Okay, roll call vote on this. Commissioner Kramer.
Yes.
Commissioner Clark.
Aye.
Commissioner Kalk.
Nay.
TC2, I move the commission acknowledge a letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a citing application to 30 days, and assess a filing fee of $17,500 in case number PU09724, Next Era Energy Resources, LLC's proposed 230 kV transmission line in Morton and Oliver counties of North Dakota.
Second.
Next Era Energy has submitted this letter of intent to give the commission a heads up that it'll be filing an application for authority to construct an 11-mile, 230 kV transmission line in central North Dakota. The purpose of this particular line is to connect a proposed phase three of the Oliver Wind Energy Center, which would contribute 49.5 megawatts of wind power to the grid. The line is proposed to run from really effectively about Nelson Lake, North Dakota, in Oliver County, to the 11 miles almost straight south to Morton County, North Dakota, to hook up the proposed wind farm to the existing transmission line. It taps into the to that substation related to Mincota's operation of the Milton R. Young plant, which is located right on Nelson Lake. The proposed cost of the project is estimated to be about $3.5 million as far as the construction timetable. NextEra has indicated that it would like to begin construction on June 1st of next year, with completion by December 31st of next year, so that that energy can be brought online for their customer.
All in favor?
Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio.
Good. Commissioner Culp.
Item BK1. I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for comment in the application for approval of an interconnection agreement negotiated between United Telephone Mutual Aid Corporation and Mid-Continent Communications, case number PU09723.
Second.
Typically, this type of notice is posted to our website for 90 days for comment. At the end of that period, if there's no comments, it's approved by default. However, in this request, December 9th, Mid-Continent filed a request for approval of the interconnection agreement in less than 90 days. So we'll put this notice out there. Written comments are due back to us by January 25th, and then this will effectively give them the opportunity to put this agreement in place approximately a month quicker than it normally would be.
All in favor?
Aye.
That concludes the items in my portfolio.
Very good. To let everyone know, while we will recess here momentarily for signing orders, and then we'll, of course, have our admin agenda covered briefly. We will leave this meeting open until after an informal hearing this afternoon on the Hawthorne oil pipeline project, because there are just a couple of little details to work out before voting on an order, perhaps, this afternoon, so that everyone knows.
One item I wanted to add, yep. I received a text from the Secretary of State during the meeting, and he is younger than the state, just to clarify the record.
What was that about?
You missed it.
I'm sorry. Sometimes I miss the moment.
It's Al Jager's birthday.
It's Al Jager's birthday,
today.
Yes.
Sometimes I miss these moments of greatness.
Yes. Okay, well, any questions? I think we're fine.
About the United Telephone Mid-Continent common opportunity.
Sure.
Is there... I presume you have the authority to shorten the comment period?
Yes. Back in 2003, the Commission set forth procedures that we told all the telecoms that we were changing the way we were doing business, and they all agreed, and we've been operating that way since November 20th, 2003. It lays out if there's anything that discriminates against certain carriers or if the implemented agreement is not consistent with public interest, convenience, and necessity, but we've been doing this since 2003.
Is there any particular reason what case did the company make that the comment period should be shortened?
They didn't really make a case other than that's their right to ask for it. In discussion with them, I believe they just want to start their businesses earlier, about what it comes down to.
Yeah, Commission practice has been to allow these to go into effect by virtue of law, but in certain instances, companies wish them to go into effect quicker, and in order to do that, we have to notice it and allow that to happen.
Do you expect this is going to be controversial?
I don't think so. Most of these, this is the third one that since I've been here, and it's just kind of it shortens the period down is about what it comes down to. People, if they're going to comment, it seems like we hear about it right away.
I mean, how is this going to benefit consumers?
They should have more choices, actually, earlier.
The Just Wind, can you refresh my memory, please? Why is it that you declined to cite the six turbines?
Well, basically, what it related to was their proximity to residences. There were, in the case of these six turbines, some of them were rather close in about the 800-foot range. Some were a little bit further out than that. But as you know, the Commission has had a general rule of thumb of trying to keep wind turbines at least about a quarter of a mile away or 1,400 feet. In this particular case, they were significantly closer than any others that we had cited. We didn't feel that there was enough information on the record with relation to safety, ice throw, flicker, noise issues that would allow us to break the informal precedent that the Commission had had. So we declined to cite those six turbine locations while allowing the rest of the project to go forward. Now, as you know, the Just Wind has not been constructed yet for whatever reason. I suspect it probably is in relation to securing a purchaser. But while they're in the process of doing what they need to do to firm up their construction plans, they've asked us to take a look at those six turbine locations. In order to do that, we would have to get more information on the record. It's their burden to do it. It's not the commission's burden to defend its order. And so by setting up a hearing, it allows them the process in which they can put information on the record for the commission's consideration.
What was their argument at the time in favor of siding these?
Well, their argument was that these were landowners who, that the folks who lived in the residences were the landowners who were participants in the project, and they wanted the turbines. Certainly, a lot of that is, I'm no doubt, driven by the revenue stream that that as a landowner they would get. And so they did submit some, and I can't remember if it was submitted at the time or shortly thereafter. They received, I guess in the interim, some waivers from folks who live in the area and signed off on these particular turbine locations. I assume that that's something that they will put into the record. The weight that the commission will give those is something that we're going to have to consider. I've thought for some time that there may be ability for some flexibility in the case of a landowner signing off on something a little bit close in our general rule, which would be a little bit like how we handle avoidance areas. When there's, say, a pipeline that comes within an avoidance area, we will allow a landowner to some flexibility to sign off on that. But there's also a point at which we simply wouldn't site a wind turbine, even if a landowner signs off on it, just as there is a point at which we're not going to site a pipeline, even if the landowner signs off on it, because we just feel it's too close for the public's safety to site something in a particular area.
I think it's the Logan County situation has a little bit unique, too, in that the county's zoning ordinance provides for a 750-foot setback. As Tony said, our tradition has been 1,400 feet, based on sound studies and noise studies and safety. We veer from that occasionally with the consent of the resident, assuming that there are other factors, of course, like perhaps other structures, whether it's trees or buildings that might be between the 12 or 1,300 foot setback in the home. Again, the compliance of the resident of the structure. But when you start getting 800, 900 feet, you know, that's a little bit closer than we're comfortable with, at least have been comfortable with to this point, realizing that this is also an evolving technology, that some of this science isn't exactly known either. I mean, even we've evolved a little bit. The very first wind farm we sited in Pierce County we had a 1,000-foot setback, so we've actually extended that a little bit. Also, the legislature in the last session did pass legislation requiring us to put in our rules some guidance for setback, and that's where Tony's talking about perhaps treating that 1,400 feet as an avoidance area that we could then alter with appropriate evidence. But the other thing I think to remember is that we've ordered, this has been sited, this wind farm has been sited. What we're talking about with these six new structures is in many respects, as a matter of process, a brand new application.
How many turbines were there in the process?
I knew you'd ask that. It was a big wind farm.
Yeah, it was 300 and some megawatts, I think, total, maybe 380, something like that. I can't remember it. How many turbines that was exactly.
Okay, just so that I'm clear, there are certain circumstances under which you would not site a wind turbine close to a residence regardless of what the...
See, that's... Oh, sure, and I mean, one I can think of off the top of my head is we wouldn't put a wind turbine, I can't imagine, in any case, next to a residence if the residence was closer than the fall-down distance of the turbine itself.
And that's kind of where I'm at now, Dale, is that, you know, this is not a new one. This is a request to amend our certificate. So I don't view it as a new one. I view it as we're opening up what we've already done before. I see it differently that way. And I'm there with 1,400 feet. It's reasonable. It's defendable. It gives the developers the certainty they need and also protects the public interest. This company has had a significant amount of time to give us the additional data that I was looking for, and all they gave us recently was some sound data, and that's it. So that's where I'm falling out differently than those two gentlemen.
I guess the question becomes, why should the commission decide that it knows better than the homeowner?
Because that's our job, is to protect the public interest, the uncertainty of noise, the uncertainty of impact to public health for the flicker. There's a lot of uncertainty that grows as you get less than 1,400 feet, in my opinion. And that's why I'm very comfortable with 1,400 feet.
Well, I guess the question here is, you mentioned the public interest. Mm-hmm. What happens when the public, you know, frankly, thinks that what you're doing is not in their interest?
There can be cases where not just the person who lives in that residence is affected. For example, there are mail carriers who may pass by on that route. There are friends who visit. There are ice throw issues. I mean, so it, while the greatest impact is perhaps on that particular landowner and occupant of the residence, there are things that come into a public concern that the commission is there to protect.
Was it strictly they were too close, or was there also issues like ice throw or too much noise?
They didn't have any data. They were very close, and they didn't have data to back up any of those questions. So we asked for that data, and they didn't provide anything. And since that time, they provided some noise data, and that's it.
How many homeowners are there involved in these six turbines? Do you know?
No, but I'm going to guess six.
Yeah, that would be my guess as well.
I think that's right.
So you have six separate landowner homeowners who, in your judgment, they have these turbines too close to their residences. Is that right?
Well, that's what the determination the commission made in the initial application was that we didn't think that the applicant, Just Wind, had met its burden of proof to cite those particular wind turbines. Now, they'll have an opportunity to make that case, but they still have to put the information on the record.
As far as the NextEra Energy, is this this basically is what they need to begin construction in June?
Well, it would. They have to file an application, and once the application is complete and we approve it, then that's what they need to construct the transmission line. To make any determination on the wind farm itself, it indicates that phase three is a 49.5 megawatt wind farm, which is, if it's a standalone wind farm, would be below our siting threshold. I suppose there can always be questions asked about whether it's integrated with the rest of the project that's there, and this doesn't make any determination about that.
I mean, has the wind farm that this power line would serve, has it been constructed?
It has not, and up to this point, the commission has not cited any of the Oliver wind farms.
So in other words, this power line is being built for a wind farm that has not been built nor sited.
That's correct.
Not been sited nor built.
It's not unlike the commission's case where we sited the transmission line for the Tatanka wind farm, the state line project, which at that point was not a jurisdictional wind farm and had not been built yet.
Is there any concern about Burley County looking at a wind turbine ordinance at this point? Have you looked at it? Have you been contacted by Burley County?
I don't think concern is the right word. I mean, whatever Burley County decides, just like any other county, will have an impact on how wind farms are constructed in Burley County. That is a decision which is reserved to county commissions in this state. I've had individual conversations with at least one commissioner who's just called and asked for more information on what the PSC does. I understand that Jerry Lean's been invited to attend a meeting. Is it tonight? Yeah, tonight to provide any input or just sit in or learn more as well. So they have been in contact with the commission.
Does Logan County have a wind turbine ordinance?
They do.
Okay, and
they're
set back at 750 feet.
See,
counties or local zoning organizations, of course, when it comes to energy conversion facilities, you know, i.e. generation facilities, they can pass ordinances that we cannot override, except to make it stricter. Obviously, we can't come in and say, that's... that's too much. We can't come in underneath that. But we when it comes to it, unlike a transmission facility, of course, that has might cross multiple jurisdictions, then our jurisdiction prevails. But we still do what we do, but we abide by the ordinances of the local jurisdiction.
The net effect of it is we can't override them, and they can't override us. So what happens is whoever has the more strict interpretation will prevail.
But I think it's a good thing the counties are doing this, because the counties need to have that discussion, so I think it's more responsible development. We did that wind hearing up in Rolla, and it was clear that the two counties had different viewpoints, and I think that their viewpoints caused the development to happen in one county and not the other. So I think counties should be looking at this very closely so they can decide what the future of their county looks like.
I guess I wanted to ask the question, do you believe that counties should be able to regulate wind farms?
Oh, absolutely. I do. I mean, it.
And townships too?
That's the law. Less than 60 megawatts, we don't have jurisdiction.
Well, to the degree that their own ordinances provide that they have the ability to do it. One of the things that I think is important with regard to generation facilities is they do have a large impact on the land use and the environment in that particular area. Just like cities and townships and counties have the ability to zone certain businesses in certain areas, and I think that that's a good thing, and there should be that local control. If a county simply decided that for whatever reason they don't like certain kinds of generation facilities, be they wind, nuclear, coal, whatever, I think that there should be a certain amount of latitude that is granted to local citizens through their publicly elected boards to control that type of activity. Now, there is a difference with transmission lines, as Kevin pointed out, or pipelines, in that they serve large regions, go through multiple jurisdictions, and you can't have a situation where one particular township holds up something that's of a benefit to a huge area. But with generation facilities, I look at it a little bit more like other local zoning issues with regard to any other business, and I think people who live in that area should have some say over how that develops.
Well, this gets to the question of, okay, Logan County has a 750-foot setback, and you have a 1,400-foot setback. Well, where do you get off telling, Logan County what they should do?
No, because state law gives this commission the ability and the authority to take all sorts of independent factors into consideration and use our best judgment. And that's what we should do.
So, in other words, you should be able to override Logan County?
No, it's not a matter of overriding. I mean, if Logan County wished to...
if someone wants to put up a
1 mile setback, they could do it, and
we'd be outside of that.
And then we'd be outside of that.
But if they want to have a 750-foot setback, they can't do it.
If they was less than 60 megawatts, they can do as they please, because that's the way that the statute's written. And that was a good debate during the session.
But does the Logan County ordinance, as approved by elected people, does that have any weight in your decision as to whether or not to allow these six turbines to be located?
Well, it's the minimum threshold that has to be cleared. But in addition to that, there are factors that state law gives this commission to look at, and we'll look at them independent of that.
I guess I'm still not clear as to why 1,400-foot good, 750-foot not good.
There's nothing magic about 1,400 feet. 1,400 feet has tended to develop as the rule of thumb based on the evidence that has been presented in cases up to this point, and it's related to primarily noise. At 1,400 feet, there's a fairly good track record that wind farms will produce below 50 decibels. It's based on flicker, which is the flicker of the turbines themselves, and that it keeps it at a acceptable level. It's related to things like ice throw. So it's because of the characteristics of the wind farm that 1,400 feet has become kind of an easy rule of thumb for developers and the public to look at. But it's not a written in stone. It's not magic.
I would say this to Dale, that by virtue of our election to the Public Service Commission, the laws that govern it and the technical staff that support us, the expertise does lie in the North Dakota Public Service Commission for Energy Development. Now, does that give us complete right to just roll over local officials? Not at all. And I think, certainly the three commissioners sitting up here have great respect for local jurisdiction, local control. while at the same time we have a responsibility to safety and orderly development, and sometimes those two things are in tension. But I will tell you this as well, that as this wind energy industry has developed and as it's sort of progressed in North Dakota, both by law and by rhetoric, I don't hear a lot of legislators telling us that we ought to shorten the distance between turbines and residences. Most of what we are hearing is that we ought to be expanding it. So, you know, we're doing what we are supposed to do within the law and within our expertise. But at the same time, we're evolving in this industry along with the industry itself. Interestingly, just this morning I heard watching CNBC that GE is now coming out with their 2.5 megawatt wind turbine. So things are getting bigger. These turbines are getting bigger. There's more consequence to what they put out and what they can do.
The New Star ruling, when their application came in, if someone comes and asks you for a PCNM, do you do an examination of whether or not they need one?
That's a good question. Generally, if somebody comes in with a PCNM, I will tell you in this particular case, when they've made the decision or they've made the answered the question themselves and come in for a PCNM, it's very easy for us, generally speaking, to do what's required to grant the PCNM, check their viability as an agency or as an entity, whether they have the technical expertise, obviously the financial backing, whether there's a need for it. In this particular case, it's a little bit unusual because, of course, this is a pipeline that had been in service for over 50 years when they came in with the PCNN. Oftentimes, a PCNN is not requested or obtained 50 years after the facility has been built, but rather a PCNN is transferred. And that probably would have been a more appropriate in this case had there been one in the first place. So there was some confusion, and that's what led to this. But once the city of Fargo, asked for intervention, then while the case was open, we had to let the process work itself through.
Well, it appears that the pipeline company, they asked for this because I imagine they thought it would be, easy street. The pipeline's been there for years, and then all of a sudden they run into some static, and then they decide, do we really need this thing after?
Well, you'd have to ask the pipeline company those questions.
I mean, was there any review of whether they needed this certificate in the first place? Is that your problem to figure out something like that?
I don't know that it's our problem.
Yeah.
I think applicants will from time to time informally ask, staff questions, but at the end of the day, it's an applicant who has to decide whether they want to incur liability or not.
Sometimes a pretty common, obviously, prerequisite to something like this would be a request for a letter of determination or a letter of jurisdictional determination. So, but in this particular case, it became an application.
Could you just refresh my memory as to why the city of Fargo intervened?
Well, I'll give you they have said why, and that's why we narrowed the question down. But they intervened so that they could be a party to the case to be able to comment on the safety or potential lack of safety of that pipeline, which, of course, runs very close to and underneath some of their water supplies. So their reasoning for wanting to intervene sounded more like a siting reasons than they did PCNN reasons, but the PCNN case provided the opportunity for them to at least intervene and then be party to and comment on this pipeline.
Do you think it was influenced at all by the deliberations over?
Yes, okay. The Keystone pipeline. Yeah, I don't think it was. I know it was because Fargo stated that it was. That they stated in their attorney stated. Either in their opening comments, I think in their opening comments, that the reason for intervening was exactly that they were somewhat accused of coming to this party kind of late, considering that there are all kinds of petroleum pipelines that run in close proximity and even underneath some of their water supplies, and they've never commented previously.
And it is important to remember that that was a citing case,
right?
However, as opposed to this, which is a piece
but
of
but I think it's important though, and, you know, to remember that Fargo right now is in very serious phases of water development, and that is to say that, you know, they're very obviously very involved in the diversion of Missouri River water, or the hope for it anyway, at some point, to the community of Fargo and to the Red River Valley for, you know, industrial and commercial and personal use. So their interest is heightened in these kinds of issues, and that's understandable. If there's nothing else, we will recess because we will reconvene.
What time is the Hawthorne in
Fargo? 1:30.
Is it first or second on the agenda?
It's second on the agenda. The first one is that U.S. Bioenergy.
Oh, yeah. So it's second on the agenda. All right. We'll sign orders.
The Bioenergy one, is that the one where they want to tap into the Alliance pipeline?
That's right.
Okay.